the first point that I wanted to look at was just a wrap-up of a note from last time, which, of course, because I had the Shavuos program last Sunday night, the last time was 2 weeks ago. And that was from a Tosos at the top of Ayin Hei Umud Beis. So I am going to share the screen so that you'll have that there for yourselves. I'm just opening it up on my own screen. And I'll share it. Okay, coming your way. So we had learned, you'll recall, at the top of Ayin Hei Omid Beis, well, it was the bottom of Ayin Hei Omid Aleph, onto Ayin Hei Omid Beis, about how one would clean various parts of a wine press in order to enable their use after they had been used by someone who wasn't Jewish. If I bought it off of someone who wasn't Jewish. And we went based on, it seemed like we were going based on materials. But then the top of Ayin Hei Omid Beis, starting on Ayin Hei Omid Aleph and then working its way over, talked about different fibrous kelim. We had a sieve that was used to filter wine from grapes. And what if it was made from human hair? What if it was made from wool? What if it was made from flax? And then we talked about reed baskets as well. So Tosfos, the top Tosfos on the page, which you should all have on your screen now, the Kisna, you see that? We had said that if it's made of flax, miyashnan, then you let it sit for a year. That's what we had said one should do. So Tosfos says, Omer Rabbeinu Tam. Demapos usedinin shalanu, the part where I have the arrow going. Demapos usedinin shalanu shesharu biyayin nesach, ein itzarech liyashnan. He says, if I have a tablecloth or if I have a sheet that got soaked with yayin nesach, I don't need to age it for a year. Even though it's made of the same materials, apparently it's a linen sheet or a linen tablecloth. Midaloka amar kol klei pishtan stam, because it didn't say in the Gemara all flax things have to be aged for a year, all wool things have to be dried. It didn't generalize based on the material. So elahani kelim shemanu chachamim shahayu bekiin davka bebli asan. So only the only kelim, the only utensils that require the treatment that we mentioned in the Gemara, are those for which the Chachamim were expert, and they said, we know that because not just of the material, but because of the way it's used, because of the way the material is put together, it absorbs in this way. But that's why this is required, the aging for a year. In other words, not everything made of linen is going to need to be aged for a year. That's Tosfos's position. And then he goes on to say, "Ve'ein lechalik bein yayin nesach shut sonein u'bein shar iser roter shenafal al hamapos." He says, "Further, you might make the argument that wine is different from yayin nesach is different from, let's say, a tablecloth that had something treif fall on it, something hot that was treif fall on it. Maybe you would make a distinction and say, well, one was hot and one was cold." He says, no, don't make any distinction. Rather, hakol yesh lahatir bekibus klisheni. He says, all of those things would become permitted if they are washed in a klisheni, meaning not the thing that's on the fire, but even that which had held hot water on the fire. So I had a tub, I filled it with water, I heated it up on the stove, I took it off the stove, I put the sheet in it, that's going to be good enough. Why? Kivada yadua. It is for sure known. Shal yadei kibus gadol shechovtin kama v'kama pa'amin. Because through the great laundering that we do, where it's not just that it's heated up in the water, but it's also struck multiple times, i'efshir shelo yetze ha'iser. It's impossible that the iser will not be beaten out of the tablecloth. So the tablecloth is going to be properly cleaned through our laundering process. Whether it absorbed hot, whether it absorbed cold, doesn't make a difference. The only thing he says is, v'shema yesh l'chalek bein iser shenidbak l'she'eno nidbak kol kach. He says, maybe there's room to distinguish between where the prohibited material is a sticky material, as opposed to where it's not so sticky, as in fact he invokes the Gemara in Zvachim that does so. So Tosfos' position is that when our Gemara says that the the kalim, the implements that are that the implements that are used in the wine press that are made of flax need to be aged for a year in order for them to be cleaned and koshered, right? And we talked about already a couple of weeks ago what that means in terms of the aging process. Is that it dries out? Is it what exactly is happening there? But the bottom line out of our Gemara is that you need an aging process of a year. He says that's only for those implements. Other things made of linen don't need that. Just wash them in a cliche, and you're done. That's all you need to do. So that leads to an interesting question. What about nowadays and using a washing machine? If I run a hot cycle with the cloth, is that sufficient to take care of it? So the Rosh, commenting on our Gemara, mentions this permission by Rabbeinu Tam, and he argues that that may not work, especially if the absorption is through a hot medium. If the iser, if the prohibited material was absorbed in the cloth when it was hot, he says, then your heter of klisheni may not work. And the Rosh notes that they also did repeated exposure to water and ash, that rinsing and drying process that we had talked about. He isn't so comfortable with the idea that a klisheni could actually be used in order to clean this. Whereas the Mordechai was very comfortable with that idea. He says their washing practice worked. And the Rama actually paskined like this. The Rama paskins with the Mordechai. So I'll show you the Rama. If I had remembered that I wanted to go back to this when I made the source sheet, I probably would have just put this on the source sheet. Nonetheless, we can work with it. I'm just going to share the Rama with you. Okay, should be showing up on your screen shortly. What we're looking at is Yeridea Kuf Lamed Ches, which deals with koshering parts of a wine press. And specifically, we are looking at the Rama in Kuf Lamed Ches. That's what we're looking at. The part that I have that I've highlighted here. So at the end of the line, he says, Mapos Shalanu Shenafal Aleihem Yeinam. Our cloths that had non-kosher wine fall on them, sagiluhu bahadacha, it's sufficient for it to be rinsed, afilu nafalaleim yayin roteach, and even if it was hot, this wine that fell on it, he's okay. He says it's sufficient for them to be rinsed. We assume that we're still talking about the hot water rinse, the klisheni. But the position of the Mordechai is adopted by the Rama, is that fundamentally it's just about cleaning. It's not really a Haggalah process at all. It's a cleaning process. And that's sufficient. And from this, you get the idea, which you're probably familiar with, that when it comes to preparing for Pesach, if a person wants to take a tablecloth that they used all year long and use it for Pesach, you don't have to go through a Haggalah process. What you have to do is have it washed in your washing machine on hot. Now, two notes that are important to remember when you would do that. Note number one is that you can't do it in a very dense load, meaning if you pack it with stuff, then the surfaces aren't all going to be exposed to the hot water. That's number one. And number two, that if there are knots or tangles that could have crumbs inside of them, those all have to be undone before you're going to wash it in the machine, or you're just washing it and keeping the chametz right along, tovel v'chametz biyado, so to speak. That would not be acceptable. But again, this is all going back to what we had said before about the linen materials or the flax materials really that were in the wine press. It's all based on Tosus's point that what we said in the Gemara was not material specific, it was kli specific. So even though the Gemara says a year for the flax, that doesn't mean that Caleb made out of flax are going to need to wait for a year before they can be used or before they are rendered clean. That's just picking up from a couple of weeks ago. But let's go into the Gemara now and see where we're headed. We had one last piece about wine. I know some people are really going to miss the wine discussions, nonetheless, you know, all good things must come to an end. So we're gonna move on from wine. So I'm going to share with you the Gemara. Just make it Suras Hadaf so you can see it nicely on the page. We are on Ayin Hey Amud Beis. Brian, we're getting very, very close here. I have to decide between Shabbos and Ksuvos for our next Masechta. But here we go.
And when are you planning to launch that decision?
I don't know. I have to make it first. I mean, this is a packed daf we have coming. It's not going to go so fast. We probably have a few weeks. But yeah, I think going to have to allow people enough time to order a Gemara, certainly. So it's gonna have to be soon.
Do you have a preference? You're leaning towards something right now?
No, there really are positives on both sides, and people who come to the Shir have given me votes on both sides. It's just a matter of saying, okay, here's what we're going to do. And not quite there yet. Okay.
Okay. All right, good.
Yeah. Well, not so good. We need to get there, but we will. God willing. B'shat tovu mutzlachas. So, we are on Ayin Hayamud Beis, 75B. We are on the second line, Itmar. And to set the scene for this Gemara, the floor of the wine press area essentially is a pool of wine in our story, in the story that we're about to see. There's liquid everywhere. There are bunches of grapes that are interspersed in this pool of wine. Along comes an Am Haaretz. And when we say Am Haaretz, we mean somebody who is not necessarily careful about purity and impurity. We assume the person is Tamei, and he handles one of the bunches of grapes. So the question now is, what is the status of the grapes he handled, and the other grapes, and the wine in between them, as far as Tumah and Tahara, purity and impurity? That's what our Gemara wants to know. And it's going to lead to an interesting discussion about Tumah back in the days of the Gemara, but we'll have to get to that. First, we need to see the Gemara itself. So, Itmar, we've learned. Am Haaretz Shahoshit Yada Legas. The Am Haaretz puts his hand, he reaches into the wine press area. The Naga Be'ashkolos, and he touches bunches of grapes. So Rebbe v'Rabbi Chia, Machlokas Rebbe and Rabbi Chia, Chad Amar, Eshkol v'chol sivivo sav temein, v'chol hagas kula tahora. One of them says, the bunch of grapes that he touched, as well as whatever is around it. And when it says whatever is around it, I've seen the commentators suggest, although it's not clear why, that it means the bunches of grapes that surround this bunch of grapes. So this bunch and any adjacent bunches are Temein, v'chol hagas kula tahorin, but the entire rest of it is fine. Okay? This bunch is Tamei, everything else is okay. Clear? That's the first view. V'chad Amar, the other view is, kol hagas kula nami tameya. The whole gas, the whole press is now going to be tamei. So I'm going to ask you, based on what we just saw in the Gemara, what's the rationale here? Why is it that we would say that the, either way, make the argument for either side. Why is it that I would say that the rest of the press is tahor? Make that argument.
Maybe only what he touched became tamei, and the rest didn't become tamei.
Yeah, whatever he touched became tamei, and that's that. Okay, so what's the argument then that everything else should also be tamei?
Maybe because other grape clusters were touching that, and each were touching each other, so maybe made everything tamei.
So maybe the tumah is communicated via contact, right? Or We're talking about the being communicated via contact, via the liquid, right? Your grapes are all sitting in a liquid medium, so maybe the tumah spreads through the liquid medium. So I can understand either of those views. Either of those views makes sense to me. I should note, by the way, Ramban says, and you know what, I'm going to share it for you, although if you have the source sheet, then you already have this, but the first Ramban that I brought you on the first source I brought you in Hebrew on the source sheet, Ramban on the Masechta, says, Eshkol v'chol seviv osav temein v'chol hagas tahora. The Eshkol, the bunch, and everything around it is tameh, but the gas is tahor. So he says, Kasav harav Rabbeinu Shmuel Rumrogi. I don't know who Rabbeinu Shmuel Rumrogi was, but obviously he was known to the Ramban in 13th century Spain. Shekein hadin le'inyan yayin nesach. He says, don't think this is only a law about tumah and tahara. The same law will apply to yayin nesach. So what we're saying is, you touch these grapes, according to one view, just these grapes and those and the bunches around it now are yayin nesach, and everything else is fine. The other view says everything is yayin nesach. So I asked, why is it that this should be communicated? What's the rationale for communicating it? And the answer is because it spreads through the liquids. What's the rationale of saying it's not going to be communicated? The liquid doesn't spread the tumah. That's the basic argument one might make. So two challenges for the lenient view. First of all, I painted a picture of liquid flowing between the bunches. So if you're talking about Yayin Nesach spreading the way that Ramban noted, I understand the rules for spreading Yayin Nesach may be kind of funny. Maybe there's times when it does and times when it doesn't. Yayin Nesach is especially if I'm dealing with a Stam Yenam discussion, may have its own rules. But when it comes to Tumah, why doesn't the liquid communicate to Tumah? Why don't we wrap it up and say, everything in this wine press is now tameh? Grapes touched wine touched other grapes, there are pools of wine throughout this thing, and we're done. Everything is tameh. Why is this not clear cut? So you go back to that Ramban, which I'm going to put back on the screen. I hope I'm not making people dizzy by sharing back and forth, but I really much prefer seeing people as opposed to watching my source sheet. I spent enough time on the source sheet already. So he says, in source Aleph, after the ellipsis, Ubevadai im naga b'makom naguv, lo asar afilu mekom maga'o. He says, certainly, if you touched something that was dry, then nothing is now going to be tameh. Meaning, if the grapes themselves are dry, nothing contracts tumah, even the place you touch. And obviously, that means also it's not yayin nesach, whatever you touch, because you touch dry grapes. Elim naga be'eshkol lach. However, if you touched a wet bunch of grapes, humatir hagas ve'eshkol atzmo aser, then this position is saying that the entire wine press is fine, just this bunch and whatever's around it is no good. But that didn't answer my question. My question is, why didn't it spread? V'nira shetamo mishum sha'av al pi shemashke tofeach amenas lahatfiach chibur letuma ula tahara. He says, we do have a rule. The rule is that liquid, which is wet enough that it will make other things wet, when things touch it, they come away wet, that does join things as far as tumah and tahara are concerned, and therefore theoretically everything should be no good. V'kolshkein l'yayin nesach, and certainly Ramban says that should join things as far as yayin nesach as well. Hanimili b'shaya kan v'kan mashke v'tofeach amanas latfiach mechabran. He says liquid works to join two pools of liquid. There's a pool of liquid here, there's a pool of liquid here, and then there's some moisture in between. That is joined. Avokan, but here he says it's not your case. Batel hu al gabe eshkol ve'eno chibur lamashke hagas. He says here, the moisture that's on the bunch of grapes is batel, it's nullified, to the grapes themselves. and therefore that liquid that's on the grapes doesn't join the pool of liquid between each bunch of grapes. And it certainly doesn't join with the liquid that's on the other bunches of grapes. So again, to make sure that what Ramban is saying is clear. This is the situation as I described it in the beginning when we started today. You have bunches of grapes, you have pools of liquid in between them. However, Tuma, or Yayin Nesach status, is not communicated from bunch of grapes he touched, even though it was wet, through that pool of liquid. Why not? Because the liquid that's on the bunch of grapes isn't considered significant. It's not considered important. The grapes are important. The liquid on the grapes doesn't really matter. And therefore, it doesn't communicate tuma to the pools of liquid on the floor, and certainly not to the adjacent bunches of grapes either. Got it? Is that the... Yes?
No, I have the liquid usually is makshir the tuma, right? So you can't have, if it's dry, you're not going to have it become tame. So the question is, how much liquid? I didn't think there was really... a particular measure of liquid that needed to be on it, just the fact that there was liquid on it, even if it was, not much, it would be makshir for tuma.
Right. So what Mori points out is correct, that exposure to liquid is makshir lekabel tuma, makes something eligible to receive tuma. And on that basis, I would have thought, once these grapes are exposed to moisture, they are susceptible to becoming tameh. I would have expected that. One answer you could suggest, although I'm not sure this is correct, I have to go back really, the Mishnayos and Machshirin, which is a Masechta in Taharos, really deal with this issue of how something is Mukhshir Lekabel Tumah. It's a Gemara in Beitza. Also, one of the things that we emphasize is that you have to want the liquid. If you don't want it to be exposed to that liquid, then that liquid is not Mukhshir Lekabel Tumah. It does not make it eligible to receive impurity. So
but in the gas, you want liquid to be on the grapes. You're going to make them into liquid, actually. You're going to squeeze out the liquid from the grapes. So if there's some liquid on the grapes, that's perfectly fine, as opposed to say, oh boy, I don't want this stuff on my grapes.
Right. Right. So the other suggestion I would give you, and I think you're right with that point. I mean, there is discussion about liquid which you want and which you don't want, even in the case of a press. But I think that the stronger answer is that's why these grapes become tameh. In other words, the grapes he touches do become tameh. What they don't do is communicate it elsewhere, because the liquid that's on them is not considered significant. So I think that's the answer. In other words, they are 100% hochsher, absolutely. But that doesn't mean that they can communicate tuma beyond into the pool in between the bunches of grapes. I think that would be the answer here. The big question to me is the other way, which is, you're telling me, as Ramban just said, that the liquid is batel to the grapes and therefore doesn't communicate tuma anywhere. So why did we say in the Gemara that it's not just this bunch of grapes that's tameh, it's also kol sevivav, whatever's around it, which, as I noted, Mefarshim assume means the next bunch of grapes over. Either it communicates it everywhere, or it communicates it nowhere. What's this business of these grapes are tameh, and also the grapes that are around it? So I point you to the Ritva, which I brought you on the source sheet as source base, the bottom of the first side. It should show up on your screen. The Ritva writes, "Batel hu legabe ha'eshkolos ve'eino chibur lamashki agas." He says, as the Gemara said, the juice in between the grapes is batel to the bunches. It is not considered to join the bunches with the liquid that's pooling between them. And certainly it doesn't join the other liquids. This is just like Ramban said. Ella dilachumra be'alma amru l'saleg l'chol sevivosav. It's a chumra that we said also get rid of whatever's around it. Whatever's around it, we're also going to treat as being tamei, even though logically there should be no communication of tuma. that's the position that the Ritva takes to explain the lenient view. This sort of reminds me of the early days of the pandemic when people were talking about, you know, being communicated with any, you touch a surface and then someone else touches the surface and it goes somewhere else. And so we were very machmir in the early days about anything that touched any surface and you have to wipe it down and so on. So that's like what we're doing here. Really, this tumma does not extend beyond the initial bunch of grapes. It doesn't go anywhere. The liquid is bottled. Don't worry about it. Nonetheless, we're going to tell you to get rid of the grapes that are around it. Yes, Howard?
What if it just pools in one area and therefore it's only touching the immediate surrounding where it has pooled and not touching all the other grapes?
Right. So in the event that it just pooled in one area, then for sure the tumma does not extend anywhere. Then absolutely, as Howard suggests, it doesn't extend anywhere. I would connect that with what
Ramban... That's how it could happen. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but Ramban considers that possibility, but he doesn't like that, because he says if this were a case in which it was dry in between, then the Gemara wouldn't need to say anything. You know, then it would be clear that it can't communicate. The fact that you have a machlokas here, right? You have a view that says that it actually can communicate, tells me that that there must be liquid in between. That's the idea. So I have two views here. One view is it spreads through the liquid everywhere, and the other view is that it doesn't spread, but we're going to contaminate whatever is immediately surrounding. That will do as a chumra, just to be on the safe side as we handle this. So I'm going to take you back into the Gemara now, because we're not done with the machlokas. We were just explaining the positions. So now, we are 6 lines down. Ulamanda Omar. Ulamanda Omar eshkol v'chol svivosav tameyim. According to the one who contends that the bunch of grapes and everything around it is tamei, v'chol agas kula tahora, and the rest of the press is in fact tahor, Mishna, why is that any different? Mehadisnan from the following Mishnah. Sheret shenimtza berechayim eno mitame elamikom mago'o. This is talking about an olive press. And remember that when you process olives, you do more than when you process grapes. With grapes, you get the juice out, you press down the grapes, and you're done. With the olives, though, they had a whole bunch of stages, and one of them involved grinding up the olives. So if you have the mill where you grind up the olives and you find a sheretz, a creepy crawly creature that's going to communicate impurity, there in the press, in the mill, eino metame ela mekom mago. So the rule is it only contaminates the place it touches. V'im haya mashkin mahalech, however, if the state of it was that there was oil flowing, hakol tame, everything becomes tame. So why is it when we dealt with the bunches of grapes, we said, according to one view, tuma is not communicated through the pools of liquid? When it comes to olives, tuma is communicated through the pool of oil. Why should this be any different? So the Gemara says, Hasam lo mafsik velo midi, because in the case of the olive oil, there's no interruption. Hacha mafsiki eshkolos. Here, the bunches of grapes actually serve to obstruct the flow. Meaning, I'm not viewing this as one homogeneous landscape, but rather, there's liquid, there's a bunch of grapes. There's liquid, there's a bunch of grapes. Then it's not considered all part of one landscape, and therefore, the tumma will not flow through the pool of grape juice. The Gemara then concludes, Oru le rabbanon le rabbi Yirmiya, Va'amrila lebreid Rabbi Yirmiyah, kedivrei ha'omer eshkol v'chol svivosav tmein v'chol hagas kula tehora. The Rabbanan ruled to Rabbi Meir, or to Rabbi Meir's son, to follow the lenient view. The bunch of grapes and everything immediately around it is tamei, and the entire rest of the gat is going to be tahor. That's the position that they accepted, la halacha. So that causes a very interesting question. Rabbi Yirmiyah, I believe, if I remember correctly, and I did not look it up, but I believe Rabbi Yirmiyah is 5th century Common Era. Why are the Rabbanan giving him any sort of psak regarding Tuma and Tahara. Right? What are they doing in the 5th century with Tuma and Tahara? The Beis HaMikdash hasn't been around for centuries. Why would the Rabbanan have given him a psak? And it's, you know, this is not just they paskined the debate in the Gemara. O rule means they gave him a practical ruling. They said, this is what you do. So my gut would have been to say that this is probably about Yayin Nesach. Right? It wasn't about Tumah. Remember that the Ramban said, this discussion also applies for Yayin Nesach. However, that's not the way that various Mepharshim take it, and instead they point to a very interesting phenomenon, which is recorded in the Gemara in Nida Davav Amid Beis, which is Tumah and Tahara did not stop with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but in fact went on for a long time afterwards. And here I give you source Gimel on the page. Source Gimel is the Gemara in Nida in context, it's talking about how long a woman is assumed to have been a Nida when she sees blood. But the Gemara, in addressing this, is discussing whether she's a Nida in terms of Truma. Is it saying that she's a Nida in terms of Karbanos also? And so the Gemara says, E Amrit Bishlama, jump the brackets, that's just explanatory wording that I inserted. E Amrit Bishlama le Truma, Hainu Davoy Truma bime Rebbe. If Rebbe, when he talked about how long we consider her to have been a Nida, was talking about as far as communicating Tuma for Truma purposes, such a Truma will become Tame if she touched it, then you're fine. Because there was Truma in Rebbe's day, there's Truma around nowadays. Ella Iamrit Lakodesh, but if you're telling me that Rebbe was talking about communicating Tuma to Karbanos, to Kachim, Kodesh bime Rebbe mihavai. What kind of Kachim did you have in Rebbe's day? Rebbe is the beginning of the 3rd century Common Era. The generally accepted date for when Rebbe canonizes the Mishnah is the year 220 Common Era. The Beis HaMikdash hasn't been standing for 150 years. What kind of Kachim was Rebbe dealing with? To which the Gemara answers, Keda Ula, as Ula taught. Da'amar Ula, Ula said, Chavraya Madchon Bigalila. Ula, who is an Amora, he is long after Rebbe, he said, Chavraya, the Chaverim, are purifying things in Galil. And the Gemara says, Hachanami bime Rebbe, the same thing was true in Rebbe's day. What is this purifying things in the Galil? So look at Rashi and Nida, which I brought you in source Dalet, Chavraya Madchon Bigalila. Chaverim shebegalil metaharim yenom lenesachim v'shamnon lemenachos shema yibane beis hamikdash bimehem. Ula was saying, you remember Ula? Ula was the one who always wanted to make aliyah. The Ula is the sparring partner of Rabbi Yochanan. So, well, at times anyway. But Ula says the chaverim living in the Galil would actually make their yayin a tahor so it could be used for pouring on the mizbeach, their oil for mixing with menachos, with grain offerings, because they're waiting for the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt, and they want to have menachos available. They want to have nesachim available. So the Gemara in Nida shows you that post-Beis HaMikdash, they are still engaged in Tuma and Tahara. Now, there are other sources that support this idea. It's not just from here. This happens to be a very convenient one, and Rav Yaakov Emden actually brought it on an earlier discussion that we had on a previous daf on an Ayin Dalet Amud Beis. If you remember the story that we had where Rabbi Chiya sends Rav to clean out the wine press, it's for purification purposes because they're still engaged in Taharos. The idea that they're still doing things, we have sources that show that Karban Pesach continues after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash for some period of time. But here what we're saying is, you have Tuma and Tahara and Kachim going on post destruction of the Beis HaMikdash all the way through the time of Ula, and apparently from our Gemara into the period of Rabbi Yirmiyah. You follow?
I mean, how could it be possible that they could do the Korban Pesach after the beta mitzvah was Israel, where there was no mizbeach.
Yes, and
we know that the halacha is that after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, there was no vamos, right?
Correct. So definitely bamos are not allowed. However, you can have a mizbeach for the purpose of the Karban Pesach, even without a Beis HaMikdash. Rav Zvi Hirsch Kalischer made a lot out of this, going back a couple of hundred years. The Rav Zvi Hirsch Kalischer contended that we should be bringing the Karban Pesach nowadays. And he did quite a bit of work trying to convince all the Chachamim of his day. He went to Rav Akiva Eiger, he went to everybody, trying to convince them that, in fact, we should be bringing the Karban Pesach. And he addressed all the problems. The fact that we don't have Kohanim B'yuchasim, he dealt with the fact that we don't have... That we don't have Big Day Kahuna. He dealt with the lack of Parah Aduma ashes. You name it. He dealt with all the different problems. He didn't win. he lost the debate. But if you want to see a good digest of it, Mevichil Michal Tukachinsky in Ir Hakodesh VeHamikdash has a very good summary of the positions of Rav Kalischer on this issue. But lack of a Beis Hamikdash, believe it or not, does not prevent us from bringing the Karban Pesach, so long as we have a Mizbeach. But I'll show you even more. Something that was truly stunning. That Gemara Nida, that I think people are largely familiar with. But in looking into this, I came across a Yerushalmi in Brachos and the parish of the Alei Tamar on it. And I put it on your source sheets. I'm going to, again, share mine on the screen so that people can see it there. This is a Gemara in Brachos in Perek Vav. So the Gemara in Brachos in Perek Vav, in general, Perek Vav in Brachos, the sixth chapter in Brachos, talks about, a lot about, what bracha you make on various items. So here we have what seems like very innocent Gemara. Rabbi Chagai Rabbi Yirmiyah salkun lebechan vasa. Rabbi Chagai and Rabbi Yirmiyah went to the place of the stores. Kafat Rabbi Chagai ubirechalei, and Rabbi Chagai jumped up and he made the bracha on them. What is them? So the assumption I would have on reading that Gemara, chanvasa would be a term that we would use with spice sellers. And it means he smelled the fine spices that they had and he made the bracha borei minei besamim. He said, ah, this is my opportunity. However, the Alei Tamar says, no, that's actually not what's going on. Where he quotes you, Rabbi Chagai and Rabbi Yirmiyah salkin lebechan vasa, girsas hashas salkin lemei chatasa. They went for the mei chatas. Mei chatas, the para aduma water. Kachi behanusach bifnim. That, he says, is the nusach. Ulam beferusho, kasuv, lemei chatasa, vikasav alzeh kein matzasi besefer meduyak. This is the correct addition, that it's actually mechatas of the paraduma. Ubisman, originally he said mechatsa, I'm not sure what he meant there, but mechatasa is clearly that, it's the paraduma water. Ubisman ha'amoraim hayalahem mechatas. They had mechatas, they had paraduma ashes, in water, in the times of the Amoraim. Kamoshakasav benida, like the Gemara Nida, which we just read, chavaya madchen beglila. Uberosh sham, show you misnagin betaros hakodesh kibi meabayas. The Rush writes on that Gemara Nida that they actually observed the laws of purity of kachim, like in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Vechen kedeshu mafrishin truma v'chala betahara, that would enable them to separate truma and chala betahara. Vechen hayu elu sheyu ochlin chulin al taras truma, there were people who ate chulin, regular produce, but on the level of purity such that they could eat truma as well. And he says, Rabbi Chagai, mevarech al hazas mechatos. And he says the bracha that he was making was on sprinkling the paraduma water on somebody. Just like we make a bracha on going to mikvah, so the bracha for the mechatos. That's what he says. And he says, as far as how it is that you ended up with our edition, this is cute, the end here, v'yitachin af l'girsa shalanu, hayakasuv l'beichatasa. It could be our edition also said originally l'beichatasa, v'nechlaka hates b'tachtisa. But the tes got split at the bottom, v'yatsa chanvasa. So that it ended up saying chanvasa. It's all a product of somebody who had a split letter tes that caused them to read it as chanvasa, but in fact it was chatasa. That I find very difficult. Because one person had a split test in his manuscript and everybody's got Hanvasa as a result, I find challenging. But it's fascinating to think that they were actually doing this, that they were observing Tuma and Tahara in the days of the Amoraim down to the 4th, 5th century. Clear?
Why can't you just learn the Hanvasa and leave it as it is and still learn the same thing?
So I think one of the imperatives, he claims that he has manuscripts to support it. But I think another point is, because in context in that Yerushalmi, they're actually talking also about Berachas HaMitzvah, not about Berachas HaNe'anin. So it doesn't make any sense if it's Chenvasa. So and there's room within the sugya itself for it to be Chatasa. Okay. So, God willing, next week, we will pick up with this Mishnah. It's our last Mishnah in the Masechta, and that concluded our wine discussion. If you have any wine left, you have to drink it at this point. At this point, we move on to talk about, we talked about kashering the wine press we obtained from the Akum. So now we're going to talk about kashering other things we get from an Akum, which is going to lead us to a discussion of Tovel and Kalim and various kinds of kashering. And yes, Brian, I need to get around to deciding which Masechta we want to do next. It's really neck and neck in terms of the results. Yeah.
Can I make a suggestion then?
Yeah, sure.
Perhaps maybe we could maybe take another vote among all the people on the share and just see if we can, which one wins. You can shove us in
Ketuvos. Well, Jack, I know you want Ketuvos. You've already made that abundantly clear. The vote that we took was a pretty thorough vote. Maybe it's worth it just because we're down to two different options. Maybe. We'll see. I want to go back and think it through some more in terms of what I think is better for the shear, based on what I've seen the last years, to see whether one makes more sense.
If Jack wants to get some campaign signs and put them on,